podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. Oh, Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, or if you prefer, the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their Garmin, spy belt, compression shorts, MP3 player for podcasts, wicking shirt, and, of course, their favorite pair of shoes, and get out there. This is not Chris, the host. This is Steven. I'm the guest announcer this week. Now, when you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, make sure you come visit me at runningthestraightandnarrow.blogspot.com or .wordpress.com, where I try to take the lessons that I learned from running and apply them to everyday life. So wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on, then. Let's go for a run.
Hello, this is Chris, and I'm really lucky today. I'm lucky enough to have with me Dr. Bernard Berko Finkel-Horowitz, eminent sports anthropologist and chairman of the Backwards Running Foundation. Dr. B, can I call you Dr. B? I'm so grateful to have you on the phone. Your theories on backwards running have really changed the way myself and so many other experienced runners look at the mechanics of bipedal locomotion.
It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Now, Dr. B, tell our listeners about your theory on backwards running.
Well, Chris, I'd have to say it's more than a theory at this point. You see, we've got irrefutable evidence that early humans originally were designed to run backwards. Only recently, with the rise of agricultural farming, we have turned evolution on its head and started frontwards running as a means to push the newly invented plow. Clearly, this is why such a large percentage of runners suffer injuries. They're just doing it the wrong way. They need to turn around and run backwards as nature intended.
Wow. This is quite a revelation for us. What is this evidence that you say supports backwards running?
Well, first of all, man is clearly designed to run backwards. As an anthropologist, I can see no other reason for us to have such a large gluteus maximus, or backside, if you will, if not for the sole purpose of cushioning when the backwards runner falls down.
Yes, I see. But how can you say humans evolved to run backwards?
Well, you see, Chris, the fossil evidence proves that when early humans came down from the trees, they had new predators to deal with. They weren't fast enough to outrun them, so they had to turn around so they could use their hands to fight while they backed out of conflict. I mean, you've done this yourself. Well, say you're attacked by an angry dog in the neighborhood. You turn and face it, right?
Wow, I see it now. It's so obvious now. But how did you guys make this intellectual leap?
If you've read the book Evolved to Run, there's a tribe of Native Americans called the Tiramisu Indians in northern New Jersey. They still practice backwards running, and we were able to observe them in their natural habitat, a place so remote they have not been corrupted by modern society. Actually, it's in the woods behind the Walmart near Bergen off of Exit 23. This tribe, it's still using the natural backwards running style.
Wait a second, Dr. B. I've got some questions here. You know, why do we stand upright on 2 feet and have our knees and ankles bend the way they do? You know, that would seem to make backwards running harder, not easier. And why are our eyes on the front of our heads if we're designed to run backwards?
Chris, the knee thing bothered me as well. Until recently, we had a breakthrough archaeological find that put all the pieces in place. At a dig in Nambia from the pre-Simian era, we found the bones of early hominids co-located with the bones of spider monkeys.
Okay, so what? What does that mean?
Chris, don't you see that this without question proves that early humans evolved bendable knees because they were farming spider monkeys and they needed to be able to bend down to milk the little primates. Well, the fossil record is crystal clear on this.
Oh, of course. I see how all the puzzle pieces fit together now. But what about the eyes?
Ah, the eyes, yes. Well, it's been shown through fossil records how some fish, like flounder, have evolved to have both eyes on one side. We theorize that the same thing happened to early humans. The eyes migrated as they embraced plow pushing as a means to survival. We hope to turn up proof of this shortly.
Well, your evidence is clearly compelling, Dr. B. If this is such a true and simple theory, why aren't more runners embracing it?
Oh, one word, Chris. Conspiracy. It's unfortunate, but the entire pants industry has been built around the concept of frontwards running and walking. The big pants companies are working to hide the truth.
And so what's the answer?
The answer is simple. We must throw off our pants, embrace our origins, and run free. And Chris, I will leave you with a quote that sums up my theory. I believe it was William Shakespeare who said, "I like big butts, and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny." You just let that sink in, Chris. Thanks for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
And it's been an honor and a privilege speaking with you too, sir. Clearly, you've rocked our world.
That sound you hear is Buddy the Wonder Dog going for a swim. Buddy's back on it after an eight-day rest. We're out here down the pond. Beautiful night. Not much wind. Sun's just setting. Sun's setting in at 6:41, and the sun just slid behind the hill over there. And autumn is here. The fish are jumping again, getting ready to sleep for the winter under the ice. And leaves are starting to turn, especially the swamp maples down close to the water. It's really pretty. Nice and warm, like 65, 70. Yeah, so I owe you an update. Welcome to episode 87, I believe. And today we're going to interview either Harlan Price, who's a championship mountain biker with some great stories, who I met at the Wilderness 101, or it's going to be Wiley, and I'm forgetting his last name. There goes the dog. He's swimming. He's swimming around. That's good. Good to get him out again. So Wiley is from the Back on Your Feet Foundation. It's this place that gets homeless people and you know, drug addiction and that kind of people back into society by basically teaching them how to run, having them run half marathons and marathons. And I think that's just a super idea because it's really, you know, it's good and it's bad because you find a lot of ex-addicts take up running. You know, it's a great substitute drug because it's a lot of the same pleasure receptors, you know. But anyhow, so Buddy, he has been just a wreck all week because I've been going without him because he was limping around after the law pack, right? So he's been impossible to live with. He's like an old man. You let him out, goes out the front yard and barks. He's just cranky, you know. He's just being cranky. So good to get him out now. I don't know what I'm going to do. As he gets older, he just keeps getting crankier and crazier. Yeah, kids back to school this week. Going to be a big change. So I'm finding I got my weekends back, right? I don't have to go to be soccer coach or any of that stuff. I got my weekends back. So what do? You go run a relay race, a 200-mile. We don't even know how many miles it was because we spent so much extra time on the road. But I won't give you the gory details. I'll just give you the update because I owe you an update. And I'll sift through the audio and see if there's anything good to stick in. As soon as I was on the starting line, it started pouring. And it poured the entire time that I ran. Well, not the entire time, the first two legs. First leg, I felt like I was on. I was on, man. It was great. I felt like I was a superpower, and I was flying. I blew through that first exchange at like a 7:15 pace, and then I think I finished up that first lap at like a 7:30, you know, first half marathon. Nice and hilly, had the pouring rain and the headwind the whole time, but once you're wet, you know? So then we got through that. The guy tripped me in the chute, so I went down hard. So I feel okay today. It's Monday. I didn't run yesterday. I took Sunday off. You know, ran 36 miles on Friday and Saturday. So I got a little sore hip. I don't know whether it's a tendonitis from running or from falling down. Scraped up my elbow. So, you know, my first exchange was me laying on my back with the with the little arm thing in the air up the Sasquatch going, take it, go, leave me, I'll be okay. But it's a lot of fun. I'm really impressed with those guys, I tell you. He is one hard runner. Man, you see him cranking up those hills? That was amazing. It's like in the cartoons when the roadrunner goes up the hill and the pavement moves. That's how hard he was running. And then Mango is just, he's just like an assassin. He's got such an efficient stride. But we used all our bullets, I'll tell you. And then Courtney has an amazingly efficient mechanics. And she smiled the entire time. Not once did she not smile. And she had to pick up a bunch of Sasquatch's legs. And then, of course, Greg got lost twice. The more he got lost, the madder he got, and the faster he ran, and the faster he ran, the more he got lost. And he ended up doing his last, it was supposed to be 6 miles. He ended up running 9, and ended up running like a 6:30 pace. He was so angry. And he ran this middle leg, this 16-miler, which I think he stretched into an 18-miler. They had to drive him back on the course. But he was amazing. And then our last guy was Jamie, Jameson Bull. And I could tell, you know, I rode with Jamie a lot, and I could tell that if it wasn't for us being there, he wouldn't have got out for that last leg. But he sucked it up, and he put himself through some serious punishment on that last leg to bring it in, that last 9 miles. So he got we ran him in. It was a lot of fun. But I'll give you a quick overview of mine. I did that first 13, fell down, felt great. Then I had to run again at like 10, and I got out about 2 miles. It started raining like I had never seen it rain before. Now it's pitch dark. It's like 11:30 at night on these back roads in Connecticut, and I had some moments there. I had some ultra-marathon moments where I had to start walking, and it was really nasty. I was all over body tired, and I'm thinking about it today, and I can't even remember sections of that run. I can't even picture the handoffs and stuff. I was just so out of it. But it was raining so hard, I could not see. I had my headlamp on, I couldn't see my feet. All you could see was the rain. That could have been a clip there, I would have gotten right off it. But yeah, I'll give you more details on that. And then I got a couple hours of sleep, and curled up in the back of Jamie's car. Jamie said his car smelled like somebody died in it. And I admit that was me who died there. But I ran Saturday morning, and I felt fantastic. My legs loosened up, and just being in the daylight, and having some coffee, I felt fantastic. And it was an uphill leg, and it was just, my mechanics were good, nothing hurt. And so it's like night and day. It's amazing. But it definitely was epic. So yeah, that was good. So thanks for playing along if you watched our Twitter stuff. That was a lot of fun. And the Brooks stuff was good. The piece of equipment that saved my life was that Nightlight, or Nightlife, I don't know what it is. It's the shell that I talked about before, made out of the tent material. If I hadn't had that for that night leg, I would be dead in a ditch somewhere, because it just kept me warm enough, kept enough of that rain off. Not used to running in those kind of conditions. 50 degrees with a sideways rain and a 20-mile-an-hour wind uphill. So, yeah, it's like New England, but you don't expect it in September. You expect it in January. And the other key piece of equipment, they got Zenza to give us socks. And these are the compression socks, and they're just awesome. I'm never going to take them off. I'm just going to wear them all day and sleep in them, and I'm going to wear them until I get ingrown hair. They're just so awesome. I don't know why. It could be the placebo effect, but they just feel so good on your calves. They just feel so good. It's just so comforting. I don't know how to explain it. We'll have to get those guys on the phone, because it is amazing. Well, I better bring this dog in before he drowns. Hey, it was a hoot. Thanks for playing along. Hey, good morning. It's about 6 o'clock in the morning. This is Chris. We're at Exchange 22. I'm in Jamie's car. Jamie's getting out there. He's getting ready to take le baton from Greg. We're about, 2/3 through after Jamie runs, so I'm taking it from Jamie, and that'll be my last leg. My first leg, I kind of raced it. I got sucked up and ran hard in the pouring rain, and some guy took me out in the chute as I was finishing up. I went down and got some bumps and bruises and lost a little blood, but I smoked it. I smoked that first one. Second one, not so good, man. As soon as it's my time to run, it started. The heavens opened up, and it was just loose and rain. So here's Jamie. How you feeling, Jamie?
Doing all right.
Yeah.
Hanging in there?
Recording?
I'm recording.
Hey, Internet.
Hey. We're going.
Like
time
bucks.
To go. How far are you running?
11.6.
You're our last runner, so this is two-thirds done when you're done.
Yeah, and it's the home stretch from there.
So Sasquatch is down. He's got a hip problem. I'm functional, but sore. We'll see. This next one's going to be challenging.
Baby maker is giving him problems.
His baby maker is giving him problems?
Yeah.
Oh, mine is, yeah. I got a little chub rub on the Johnson. Oh, man. This is like boot camp.
And now for the equipment check.
All right, folks, this is your friend Chris, and it's been a good week, man. We won the Ragnar Relay. Our team won. Of course, there's only four teams in it, but, you know, we beat all of them. This week couldn't get any better, and I won a pair of underwear on Twitter. Somebody's giving away underwear. Some company called Sax Appeal. I'll have to see their bamboo underwear. I'll have to give those a ride, see what happens. But anyhow, I want to talk a little bit about what you need to do to run in the rain. In the pouring rain. So, you know, there's different kinds of rain, right? There's that misty rain, there's the drizzle, there's the rain with the wind. Actually, running in a slight drizzle is excellent for racing because it keeps your body cool. And I don't like the heat, so my PRs, my marathon PR at Boston was on a drizzly day. So it's drizzle is my friend. But when it starts pouring and there's water in the streets, you know, it takes a different kind of strategy. And what I usually do is, well, first of all, none of your electronics are going to work, so leave those at home. The other thing I like to have is a hat with a brim, because if you can keep it out of your face, it doesn't bother you as much. And they have some sort of loose shell. You don't want clothes that are going to absorb. You don't want to be wearing like a hooded sweatshirt or any of that, because it's just going to soak up with water and stick to you. So you got to keep your technical material. But if it's a cold rain like we were at this last weekend, it really pulls the heat away from your body really fast, right? So you remember we talked about this, 500 kilocalories per mole every time one of those moles of water evaporates off your body. It sucks the energy right out, the heat right out of you. So you want to at least try to cover up a little bit and dress in layers, in technical layers. So what I found is a nice tight, if you know it's going to rain, a nice tight undershirt, you know, along the lines of one of those tight Under Armour things or something like that. Nice tight technical shirt for a base layer, and then put some sort of shell over top of that, something loose that's going to shed a little bit of water. And that's usually what I try to go for. But, you know, once you're wet, you're wet. The only issue is it causes a lot more friction. The water is a wetting agent, as we talked about before. W-H-E-T-T-I-N-G, wetting agent, means it makes it like sandpaper. It makes all your clothes like sandpaper. So you can lose little bits and pieces off of your body from the clothes you're wearing being wet. So if you have nipple problems or any of that other stuff, in the pouring rain, it's going to be five times worse. So whatever your strategy is to prevent that, whether it's creasing up or wearing nip guards or whatever, you want to do that. In the rain, you get a lot more chafing. And then when you're done, you got to get out of that stuff right away, because if you stay in it, you're going to mess up your skin. You're going to get chills, get sick. You got to get right out of that stuff. Haven't you ever watched Bear Grylls? After he jumps in the water, he gets naked and dries his clothes over the bonfire. So what you want to do, you want to get naked in your front yard, build a bonfire, dry your clothes right there. I would recommend that. So hope everybody's having as good a week as I am. Yeah, I'm in the Camry. I'm driving down to a plant tour, and my iPod's screwed up, so I can't listen to podcasts. My new iPod Nano is not talking to me, so got to work that out. And no, I didn't run with it in the rain. Hey, ciao.
And now for our featured interview.
Harlan.
Yes, Chris.
And we're back.
All right.
All right, so I got Harlan Price here. He's, I guess we could call you a professional mountain bike racer.
Okay.
And I think you've done like 30 events so far this year, all right? Some or more?
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of my biggest years ever.
Yeah, and these aren't easy events. These are 145, you know, 100-mile, 50-mile sort of mountain bike races in the woods. So it's you're certainly a hardcore dude when it comes to the mountain bike racing. And I met Harlan down down at the Wilderness 101. He was doing a presentation on his India stage race, where he went over to India and raced a bunch of guys around in the Himalayas. It was kind of interesting when we were down there at the Wilderness 101. We were the guys with the couch, right?
Oh, that's right. You were the ones with the couch. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody knows us. We're the guys with the couch. So,
that's a great thing to have.
Yeah, so give us the 100 words or less on who you are, what you do, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. My name is Harlan Price, of course. You already heard that. Originally, I'm from Florida, and I moved to Pennsylvania after college. Got into cycling, mountain biking, and I lived in a great forest, Gettysburg. Above Gettysburg is the Michaux State Forest, and it's just really kind of rural and ancient kind of woods. And I used to go riding by myself all the time, started racing a little bit, and got to a point where I said, I'm not getting any older, and I just wanted to see if I could be a professional. So I took on full-time training and worked my way through the years to actually work less and ride more until I got to the point where I could just race and not really have to work. So I've concentrated on endurance events, 100-milers, 8 hours, 12 hours, 50-milers. I don't really like the 24-hour races. And at this point, this year, I finally kind of hit the coup de grace and got selected for the USA team for the Marathon World Championships in Austria last month. So
that must be pretty. That must be pretty cool getting to wear the jersey that says USA on the front, huh?
It was great. You know, it definitely sparked a sense of pride and going there and seeing everybody else in their jerseys, wearing their country's colors. You know, everybody just had this kind of camaraderie where we knew we were just there for the same reason, and we all just loved the bike. So.
And this was in Austria someplace, in the Alps?
It was in Graz, Austria, which is the foothills of the Alps. So we never went. Our tallest mountain we climbed to the top of was like 4,300 feet.
Right. Yeah, that's not much at all considering the area you're in there. So.
No, but I mean, well, you know how it is. Sometimes you go out west and you're sitting at Breckenridge at 9,000, but you only have like 3,000 feet of vert to climb. So it's kind of like that. We started low and went high.
Right.
Still about the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a lot of fun. So, you know, I got people listening here who are runners, and they really have no idea what mountain biking is. And I was really surprised at the physical nature, because I had done triathlons before,
mm-hmm.
and I understood the road bike, and I thought mountain biking would be sort of like road biking in the woods. And
right.
It's not. It's a totally different animal. It's
I'm curious, what did you find different physically? Was it the upper body, or was it just
Yeah, it was the core strength, the balance, and mm-hmm. the intensity of the effort, the brief intensity, a lot of brief intense effort, and just the balance, how the technical bits, right?
Right.
I spent a lot of time on the ground.
Yeah, that can happen, especially on the northeast where it's really rocky and technical.
I mean, you've done some running in your life. How would you compare the two?
Well, I definitely would say that when it comes to running, I prefer to be on the trail. There's something about being in the woods, constantly having to readjust your step, readjust your flow according to the undulating terrain. And I think mountain biking really is that's what I like about mountain biking. I definitely excel in the more technical terrain. I definitely like going downhill, and my favorite times running trail are when I'm kind of just like going downhill, barely touching the ground, waving my arms in the air, you know?
Yep, flying, exactly.
Flying, yeah, where you don't want to make a mistake. And I think, you know, I like running to a degree. I like exploring, but as far as being on the bike, I feel like you can just find more nooks and crannies, and you can go further, you know? And
yeah.
If you're tired, you can kind of relax on the bike, whereas I feel like if you're tired on your feet, it's hard to relax.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I found trails around my house, you know, where I've been running for 10 years that I had never found before once I got on the bike. Because you just have that range, you know. You get that range. You can go out and explore 40, 50 miles in a couple hours. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, where I grew up in Florida, I lived there 18 years, drove from the time I was 16. Small roads, not a whole lot of roads. You think there's not much going on. But as soon as I went down with my bike, I was finding new roads. And it was just bizarre. So,
yeah, it's cool. And when I'm out driving in my car, every time I see a patch of woods around here, now I'm looking for the trail entrance, right? I think about it in a whole different way.
Yeah. I kind of relate it back to when I used to skateboard growing up, because you look at your terrain differently. And you definitely see stuff. And your eyes are opened a little bit more. Just
yeah, yep,
just
you're
your mode of transportation.
That's a great way to put it. Your eyes are open. It gives you a different frame. That's an excellent way to put it, both mentally and physically. So that's great. And there's different types of mountain biking, too. I mean, there's, like, guys who just do downhill races. And then there's all this this time of year that you get into the cross racing, which is sort of like a combination between cross country and mountain biking.
Right, skinny tires in grassy fields, and you got to have the technical skills of a mountain bike with that pure all-out strength of going sprinting for an hour. Earlier you mentioned like the physicalness of it. I mean, I think running's an endurance sport, and a lot of times you see high school cross country athletes when they get older, they get into cycling because they have the lungs, they have the endurance, and that's just where I see the two, a crossover between the two.
Yep. Well, one of the other things about the mountain bike is you're sort of always on the edge where there's a good chance you're gonna crash and hurt yourself. I mean, in your sport, there must be a lot of injury.
There's a lot of blood. You know, I would rather crash on a mountain bike any day versus on a road bike, which people think, oh, you got rocks and trees and things. It teaches you your limits a lot. I've definitely had crashes where I've broken a bone, and I never thought I would really come back as strong after that, you know, mentally, as confident. But actually, that was sort of like the crux of me making a pro career out of it. I think it's important for people to learn to always stay within the limit. So mountain biking might seem dangerous, but you know, ultimately, people kind of choose the risk that they're going to take, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a great life metaphor, too, because I found a lot of situations, if you're afraid, you're at a higher risk of hurting yourself than if you're confident in executing, right? I mean, the risk is there either way, but the risk just gets enhanced if you start to get tentative.
Oh, at the 101 where I met you out, I had a fractured wrist. That's why I wasn't racing. And it was about 3 weeks into healing, maybe four. It's wrapped up, and I had it stabilized. And I went out on the course to take photos. And the fact that I had to be on the brake just made it much worse versus just letting go and just enjoying the ride. So, yes,
yeah,
it's a good metaphor.
Yeah, the other thing I noticed about the bike is it is, contrary to what Lance says, it is a lot of it is about the bike. And most of these guys are like, they you have to learn how to really take your machine apart and put it back together and really get sort of like one with the machine, sort of have this synergy. And that was interesting to me.
I was thinking about it earlier. I definitely envy the simplicity of running. The accoutrements that runners get to choose from are much less than the pressures of buying the newest and latest and greatest for a mountain bike. I think I do kind of think that it's the person riding the bike. You know, that's why rigid single speeds are popular. And if your listeners don't understand what that is, it's basically a bike with one gear and no suspension. So a lot of people are reverting back to that just to avoid the complexities of it, and it makes you a better rider. But
I think I'm going to convert mine to a single speed. I think that'll be much simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So So what was your best adventure in these? You've been doing this for a few years. What are your top two or three adventures?
I would say that the trip to India this year was pretty tops. That culturally was an incredible experience. And race-wise, I mean, I've done races where I've had to go harder, and you know, you learn more about yourself physically. This one, I learned a lot more about myself just in terms of how I could communicate to people, because it was a very inexperienced country with mountain biking, and it was very unsafe. So for a lot of the people that were participating, I thought it was just an incredible time to talk to people, especially people who are new to bikes, and pass on some knowledge, besides the fact that it was in the foothills of the Himalayas, which was really incredible in itself. So
yeah, I mean, had you been out of the country into the second or third world before?
I've been to Costa Rica a couple times racing a 4-day stage race across Costa Rica, but that one was pretty much a first-class operation. I've toured on bike a couple times. I've toured through Europe when I first graduated high school.
Cool.
6 months, and that was really my introduction to cycling over long distances. I basically grabbed a bike the week before I left, and decided I was going to not do the typical train thing and visit every city that there was, and I basically spent 2 months in each country and just went slow. And then in 2004, I started off with the goal of riding through Central America, and ended up just spending 2 months riding through the Yucatan, Belize, and Guatemala, and then came back.
Wow.
So those have been great adventures. I definitely love traveling and in that mode.
Yeah, in a sense, when you're on the bike like that, you're in more control. You know, you're so much closer to the element, to the country that you're touring, huh?
Yeah, and my method, my style of travel is to not really plan a whole lot. You know, I mean, I really enjoy letting the road take me where it goes, and that means meeting people and staying with them for a week randomly. That's great. If it means I don't like this place I originally planned on being and cruising down the road to a new place, that's great too. So you're definitely closer to the earth than the people.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before, where I said that the mountain bike guys reminded me a lot of the long distance trail race guys. They're a lot of I don't know, zen, laid back kind of guys, right? Take it as it comes, you know. And mm-hmm. it's sort of a dichotomy because you get these guys who are showing up to run 50 miles, or in your case, bike 200 miles in really gnarly, nasty conditions. But they're all really laid back and sort of surfer dude attitude. So it's interesting, the people in these sports. I'm thinking it must be the nature of the sports themselves that draw these kind of people.
I would definitely say, because, you know, I didn't come to cycling to get fit. I came to it as a method for opening, you know, expanding my world. And I think besides that, it's got an adrenaline factor, and I can do things in my bike that I only wish I could do in my car. So it's much safer to the world. Definitely that feeling of flow and carving a line and just letting it go and having the wind in your hair, I think it's part of the big mystique of mountain biking.
Yeah, that's so cool. So what's in the future for you? What's the next year going to hold?
You know, I'm kind of up in the air right now. I've been doing this for a while. It's not a luxurious lifestyle. You know, it's definitely taking me new places and opportunities, but still trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Sponsorship is always hard, and if I can get, you know, a little bit more sponsorship money, I'll continue doing it. Otherwise, I might just, for the next year, I might enjoy myself and ride purely for pleasure, maybe get a job. So I haven't decided yet. It is up in the air. I'm definitely, one way direction I'm thinking of taking it is more to adventure, going on big bike adventures and doing travel writing.
Yeah.
I write for random publications, and I definitely have some experience there, trying to set the groundwork so that if I decide to retire from this, I have a direction to go. And
sure.
Previous experience in journalism, so.
Yep, and that's a good segue. I see your blog out there. Give us your blog address.
It's boxedb at blogspot.com, and that's boxed B as in if you had a bumblebee and you put him in a box.
Right.
So.
And there's some great pictures of all these great adventures that we're talking about, and lots of commentary, and some pictures of the sort of off-canter crazy folk that participate in these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's a great community.
Yeah, it is, and I would recommend people, well, first of all, I wouldn't say just jump on your bike and head off into the woods. I would say find somebody who does it and get yourself, you know, a two-hour lesson from somebody who knows what they're doing and get at least a marginally sufficient bicycle to do it on.
Right. It's also, I mean, it's a lesson in preparedness, too, when you go out on the mountain bike. A lot of times novices make the mistake of no water, no tubes, no pumps, and you know, I guess a lot of runners will understand that, but with a bike you should carry a little bit more and be a little more prepared.
Yep, you got to be able to fix it on the fly, and
mm-hmm.
One thing I noticed in that race was the number of people by the side of the trail fixing tubes and
yes, definitely.
Fixing brakes and fixing everything just all the time.
Yep.
So all right, man, that's cool.
Thanks, Chris.
That's
appreciate
cool.
The opportunity.
Thanks for the time, and good luck with your adventures. And I'll subscribe to your blog so I see what you're doing. Sounds
okay,
cool.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
Carlin.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Coming to you live from the. Where are we? What kind of car is this?
Mazda.
Wow, we're gonna die!
All right.
You almost heard that horrible crunching sound as Greg was not paying attention. We just wrapped it up, 36 miles in the can.
We, you?
Me. Yeah, that's right. You guys still have to run.
Still gotta go.
Yeah. But the middle leg was horrible to me. Middle of the night, middle of nowhere, not a street light to be found. Pouring rain. Couldn't see a foot in front of me. just felt like shit. Had to run 13 miles in that crap. And even though it was a downhill leg, I struggled. This one, everything just worked. Everything just worked. And I think I passed those two guys right out of the gate in the first mile, and that was awesome. That just kept me going, you know? There's nothing like having somebody in your sights to hunt, to help you focus, you know? Okay, so I'm up in the meadow on top of the ridge. Just had to stop and tell you how beautiful it is here. The goldenrod is shoulder high, and the grass is tall, and there's a path sort of beaten down the middle of it. I'm on milkweeds, Queen Anne lace. The grass is all gone to seed, and it's all tall and brown. Good haying grass. And sun's down, so the sky is streaked with clouds, cirrus clouds, pink and orange, and it's just beautiful. It's like 60 degrees, no wind, just beautiful meadow, beautiful. And I got the big old AT&T tower here from the 1960s or 70s, highlighted against the sun, backdropped. Kind of cool, kind of post-industrial, growing out of the meadow here. It's really nice. What do you think, buddy? Pretty nice, huh? And I'm listening to Steve Runner rant about running shoes. What can you do, huh? All right, man. Run strong. On with the show.
Okay, folks, that's it. Another wonderfully mediocre episode of the Run, Run, Live podcast in the can. Next week, I'll be interviewing Dave Dunham, who, besides holding most of the race course records within 100 miles of my house, is a great guy, and he talks about the article that he has in Runner's World and about running in every town in Massachusetts and all sorts of other stuff. So, good news. I've got a new USB microphone on order, so audio quality might be getting better in a couple of weeks. Sorry, there was too much Chris in this episode. I usually try to avoid that. We are moving, my friends, into a busy, high-stress time of year now. With the kids back in school, the fiscal fourth quarter in business, it all gets really crazy. You get too much going on, and you get stressed, and you start to yell at people. Don't. Give others the gift of patience, and give them a gift of allowing them to help you. I've got lots of stuff going on, but you've heard enough from me this week already, so look within yourself for the beauty and joy. And when I see you out there, I expect you to be smiling. Music tonight is a song called On the Passing of Fairy Tale Heroes by a group called Halfway Home, and can be found on the PodSafe Music Network. listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.